A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to episode number 32 of the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We just love rugby, and that's, well, us being me, Tim, him, JB.
Hi, Tim.
And him, Phil.
Hi, Tim.
JB, last week we were describing you because you were wearing your summer garb, your summer getup. Now I want to describe you because how would you describe that shade of skin? He looks like he's made of wax, Phil.
It looks like he's not all there.
I'm not quite all there today, boys. I'm not quite all there.
So JB's just got back off of a tour, an end-of-season tour, which I imagine a lot of people, bank holiday weekend, May, games finished. I imagine there's a lot of rugby players that are getting back off a post-season tour. How are you feeling right now? You're all right?
About as well as a man who's had 3 days with all his rugby friends on a bus to Cardiff can possibly feel. we all went on tour. Nothing exciting happened. No one did anything wrong.
Your missus isn't listening to this. Come on.
We all went for a meal. We came back. We went to bed about 9. Alternative versions of the story are available. I mean, the standout thing, I think, which happened this tour was I was in charge of Kangaroo Court. Now, previously, I have done Kangaroo Court, and it has been fairly successful. Oh, I don't know where I'm going with this.
You have a little think about that, and I'll tell you a tour story.
Thank you.
Good. So
I
grew up playing for Newbury Rugby Club, and I got into the first team. We had a pre-season tour to Swansea. Playing at that rugby club, I forget what it's called, but it's the one that's up on the hill where in the film Twin Town, they drove an AC Cobra around the pitch. I can't remember what the club is called, but if you're from those parts up on the hill near Swansea, you'll know where it is. Anyway, a couple of the youngest guys, there were a couple of guys younger than me in the first team, and managed to convince them on the short drive from Newbury to the Severn Crossing that Wales was another country and required a passport at the Severn Crossing. They were gutted that they'd forgotten. We were telling them that, come on, boys, I can't believe you've let us down like this. You're going to have to get in the luggage. And they spent the journey over the Severn Bridge from one service station just outside Bristol to the one just past it, in with all the kit.
Well, on the way back from Cardiff, what we do is we start raising money for the tour set a year out. So we have a kitty. We had a few people that pulled out, so we had even more money. And I guess he came to about £1,600.
Wow.
And what we do with the kitty on the very last day of the tour, we put it behind some local bar, some local pub on the way back, and then we just drink until it's all gone. We managed somehow to persuade our coach, Mark Lloyd, that he'd left the kitty in Tesco. And this continued to about Birmingham, where he's now demanding to turn around the coach. You've never seen a man so devastated.
There's been some correspondence we should get back to, and you can get in touch with us anytime at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and I appreciate you for taking the trouble to do that. Thank you very much for getting in touch. Well, firstly, let's just mention the fact we have, you know, new listeners all the time and new people getting in touch with us via Twitter at Rugby Podcast. Two of those being, well, firstly, welcome to Canadian International and London Irish back row, second row, Jeb Sinclair, who has been entertaining us on Twitter generally. Yep. So he's well worth a follow. And
just, it's worth noting that it was JB who responded to Jeb Sinclair.
Top saying, fallow.
Yeah, thanks for the fallow.
Thanks for the fallow.
Rather than thanks for the follow.
Yeah, good first impression there, Jay. Well done.
That's
well
right.
done. Fortunately, he's still following us. As is, let's just talk about this one for a second. Jacques Berger is now following us on Twitter. One of our latest listeners is the man who has been showered with more love than most by JB. How do you want to talk? Just describe that feeling when you saw on Twitter that Jacques Berger was a listener and a follower.
Pure elation. I like to think now he is probably listening to our podcast whilst on his booster week, riding a rhino in Namibia. Almost certainly doing that.
Almost certainly.
In fact, he has got a week off.
Yeah, they rested him this week to give his knee time to recover.
After Jack Berger started following us, looked up Namibia, just so I know all the facts and figures about Namibia from Wikipedia. So if I ever run into him, we can have an in-depth discussion. We've got something to talk about.
Is that how you managed to snag your soon-to-be wife?
What, talking about Namibia?
No, not Namibia, but just stalking her and then finding out about her life.
There is a lot more effort gone into Jack Berger than has gone into meeting my future wife.
Anyway, it's great to have you listening, Jack Berger, who is now a follower at Rugby Podcast and a listener to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast as well. Do you know what? I was at the Sale Sharks Leicester game. I was working there, and we'll be talking about that in a bit, among the other games. And Alistair Eakin, commentator from BT Sport, came over in the media room and said, "Tim, hiya. Just wanted to let you and the other let the other boys know, really enjoying the podcast."
Oh, really? Oh,
went excellent. On, I have to say, a very, very tanned Alistair Eakin as well. You can tell that it's been some European matches and Sky have been taking over the mantle for a bit. It's clearly been somewhere very, very nice. And thank you for getting in touch. Lots of people who are commenting on the last podcast. And also to Chris Livett, who was at the Sale Leicester game. And I'm so glad. Do you know what? Sometimes things happen in life where you'd be so gutted if no one had seen that it happened. You do something special, and if no one saw you, no one would believe you. I was holding a clipboard in one hand, a microphone in the other, on the halfway line at Sale Sharks. Danny Cipriani kicked a penalty to touch, and I looked up, and it was coming straight for me. I didn't move where I was standing. My right hand with the microphone in, I just held out slightly, and I let the ball land on my chest, and I just clasped it with my forearm that was holding the microphone. Took it beautifully. Like, Mike Brown couldn't have done any better under a high ball.
Ice running through your veins.
But no cameras caught it. I was hoping that the BT Sport cameras might have caught it. But Chris Livett on Twitter said, "Very impressed by your catch."
Yeah, it's good that someone actually saw that.
So it did happen.
So it definitely did happen.
It definitely did happen. But what definitely did happen was 80 minutes of rugby in round 21 of the Premiership.
I think this might have been the best round of games maybe all year. It's up there.
It's probably... I've not run the stats, but it's probably the highest scoring round. 44-20 Saracens Worcester, 38-30 Gloucester London Irish, 44-38 Wasps Newcastle.
Yeah.
There's one big showdown in the final round of matches, the shootout for the playoffs and Bath Harlequins, but let's start with that Bath game. Big game, as it turned out, with controversial little sting in the tail. So what did you make of this one?
Well, some of the skills were awesome. George Ford seems to be growing every game, and I feel like I'm saying that after every week.
Unless he's playing in the wet.
Yeah, unless it's wet, yeah. He's basically a fly half with slick tyres. they say, don't they, like, officials are best when you don't notice them. I'm wondering if maybe fly halves are best when you don't notice them. Because Stephen Myler, we talk about him purely because he plays for Northampton, but he keeps on guiding teams to decent results.
Yeah.
Showed a little bit of flair for that first try for...
the offload for Jamie Elliott.
It was wonderful. I just wonder if his understated play might be far more critical than we give him credit for.
Well, in the Six Nations, he was the third fly half in the England squad. It'll be interesting to see whether he retains that place or whether he gets...
He hasn't done
replaced.
Anything to deserve being dropped, but then no. Danny Cipriani's knocking on the door. And interestingly, Danny Cipriani, picking up on the point that you made, JB, about the sort of, you know, doing the nuts and bolts well, consistently being important... Danny Cipriani has come out and said, "I'm not running with the ball very much because I'm running the show for the team." Tactically, he said, "My job is to just run the show, put us in the right parts and unleash the weapons." He said, "Whereas at Wasps, I had firepower everywhere. I wasn't actually running the team. I had decision makers, firepower everywhere. Ricky Flutie outside him, Dominic Waldock, Josh Lucy. You know, he had loads of awesome players. He was actually... in there to be a bit of a creative spark."
Dom Waldock, has he got a broken leg? Is that why he's not playing at the moment? What's his injury?
Did he not...
Has he recently come back?
Yeah, I thought he came back and then got injured.
And then got
like
injured.
12 minutes into his return match.
Ah, that is right, yeah. It was a disaster because he's a really good player.
But you mentioned that referees are best, or TMOs or whatever are best, or assistant referees are best when they're not noticed. Mm. Unfortunately... one decision from an assistant referee, which has got Bath fans, you'd have to say, understandably,
absolutely furious with this. So, Bath are now making their way into between the 10 metre and the 22.
A minute left on the clock.
Yeah.
Northampton have just equalised. It's 19 all.
It was the linesman put out his flag.
Assistant referee. Ashley Rowden, yeah, Ashley Rowden.
Puts out his flag. The ref then plays the advantage.
To Bath, late tackle.
Oh, I can feel my blood boiling now.
George Ford sits back in the pocket, says, do you know what? I'll have a pop at this for a drop goal. The logic being, obviously, if he misses, they'll get a penalty
shot. Get another
chance,
yeah.
And then, as you say, when Matt Carley jogs over to the touchline, say, all right, Ashley, what did you see? I thought Northampton 5 made a late tackle. Can you just check?
It's like a doctor putting on those like shock pads to a patient, shocking the patient, and then again, shall we just check that we needed to shock that patient?
On the flip side, had the assistant referee thought he'd seen it but wasn't sure, and player continued, let's say Bath had knocked on, is he within his rights then to say to the ref, can you just go back and have a look? I think there was a late tackle.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that?
I think so, yeah.
Is that all right?
I think you can go back.
What is the alternative? Because if Bath go through 20 more phases, which they can do...
You can't go back that far.
You can't go back. So this is my whole point. We don't need these silly laws, which are so pedantic, but you can actually see in almost every contact situation, someone's done something wrong.
No, it's not the laws. That's the way that the laws were implemented in this case.
Just it is the laws.
In this case, the assistant referee can't tell the referee it's a penalty and then say, might have been a penalty, can you check? This wasn't about... Is the law right or not?
Have you seen that?
Yeah, it was the way it was implemented. And if it was genuinely a penalty, as in laws had gone in late with no arms or something like that, then it deserves to be a penalty.
Criticising referees or assistant referees or TMOs or whatever is something that's actually we've done recently.
Yes, of course.
And a lot of people have done, and columnists have done, and players have done, or at least criticised the processes involved, not necessarily the people themselves, some of the decisions. It's uneasy with me, but we've got to watch out because... The Bath crowd, for one, there's been a lot of people saying the referee was thrown some pretty nasty abuse as he was leaving the field by Bath fans, which there's no place for that. There's the chairman of Newbury Rugby Club has come out and said he's going to deal severely with any fans, and this is at an amateur level, with any fans, and there have been some on the touchline giving the referee so much stick that it's becoming uncomfortable. As much as we get cheesed off with refereeing decisions and stuff, we can't let that happen, can we?
I think there's a difference between us sitting back after the match and kind of analysing and criticising incorrect decisions, but fans in the live action when the referee's there, particularly at an amateur level when there's only a few hundred people in the ground, that's a bit different. That's like, it's almost like players openly criticising the ref in front of them, which obviously doesn't happen at any level at all.
Refing a game is very hard things to do. You've done it, Tim. I've tried it, and I basically thought if something looks wrong, you just blow up, but don't tell them why. And I, it kind of works. But the more people that can make decisions in a game of rugby, so you've got assistant referees, you've got a TMO, you've got a ref. There's going to be inconsistencies, and it's the inconsistencies which leads to the frustration. If you look at most breakdowns, you'll probably have two refs giving you two different decisions. You then throw in this subjective safety first, not past the horizontal, head high, late hits, all these things which I actually love about rugby. And if he wants an opinion from a touch judge, which is what they should be, he can have an opinion from a touch judge. And instead of having a video official, have someone who can operate the video screen so the ref can have a look, and that's it. Simplifying the game would sort out a lot of problems.
Again, the well,
and also fine. It allows for those glorious moments like when Neil Back cheats his way to a
high, which
is glorious, by the way. It's absolutely magnificent.
Depending on what side of the fence you're on.
But
if you lose to that, you'd be furious.
But I'm a neutral, and I absolutely loved it.
Anyway, it has. I was delighted for the result because it means that we have a showdown, a real winner-takes-all kind of situation in the final weekend, because Harlequins also, and very narrowly, came away with a victory. So we've got two results which could well have gone the other way, which means that we are in for an absolute treat next weekend at the Stoop. At Leicester, they looked powerful. Sale were really good for 15 minutes, and then Leicester just blew them away.
Now, what a good game Williams had.
Owen Williams.
To the point now that this Freddie Burns transfer can't really be happening, can it? It can't. Why?
Because it's still not been announced, has it?
It hasn't. I don't think it's going to happen.
If it does happen, then Freddie Burns will just be going as backup. Yeah, just be on the bench.
They don't need to spend the money, which I assume that he's going to want. I can't wait to find out what's going to happen to Freddie Burns. It's exciting now. He had that little kick through for the Nicky Gonover try. He had a magnificent run, which ended up with the flood try. and he had the offload for, was it Niall?
Morris.
Niall Morris. I think the offload might have been the best one, actually. I don't know, the kick was pretty good, but he played awesome. And the other one was Flood played so well, and Flood being a top, top lad, and probably thinking the same as me, that he can't stand the waste of time, which is the video official, said no try.
Yeah, that was a nice touch.
That's really good.
That was a nice touch. Gonover and Tuilagi got shut down, and Sale's defence did that job very well, but like you say, there's just weapons, and they were just powerful. Really, really powerful. And I think Sale were already on the beach, to be honest. I think they were pretty much, we've got our sixth place, we're in the European Champions Cup, let's just chill out.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for them.
They took a leaf out of Exeter's book from last week and
Exeter
relaxed a little bit.
I can't wait to see the England squad that Stuart Lancaster is going to announce. There's loads of question marks. Will Michael Patterson get a call up at second row?
Well, will Owen.
Will Danny Cipriani get a call up at 10?
Well, will Owen Williams make it?
Is he eligible?
No, it's
no.
Oh, he belongs to us.
Wasps consolidated their seventh position with another massively high-scoring game against Newcastle.
Whoa.
And another comeback from Newcastle as well, to be fair.
You're not just going to scan over that Johnny Leota try, a contender for try of the season.
Oh, the Johnny Leota try.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was excellent.
It was very good, wasn't it?
I didn't think he had that kind of gas.
No, I had no idea. I thought he was just a big, boshing Polynesian. Goes one way. Wrong. Sorry, what were we saying?
Hughes, that number eight. There was a quote from him. We talked about Nathan Hughes, the London Wasps number eight last time, and how in what high regard he's held. And he said in a quote, because he's eligible to play for the land of his birth, Fiji, in the World Cup next year. And he's basically said, I've resisted the call-up so far. I've got one for England. I've got 1 year down and two to go. The indication is he might well forego the World Cup to stick around and play for England.
I think the main driver for that would be money.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Because you get, what, 13 grand
per appearance?
Per appearance, or per squad appearance.
It is a very short career. You know, you've got to do what you've got to do.
The romance of rugby, I don't like that very much, though. He should be playing for Fiji.
I think there is an argument to say that the union should get together and say it's not really that important that, you know, the England team pay more than the New Zealand team. It's important that there's more international teams, per se. Might even look at standardising the pay across Tier 1 nations, Tier 2 nations, Tier 3 nations.
It's an interesting idea.
That would definitely benefit.
So every country pays into the IRB and the IRB pay out international players.
I don't know how that would work, and God knows how they'd negotiate it.
But then there's so much other stuff. There's marketing, you know, you get the adverts, you get all the sponsors. And
But I mean, what point is a really strong England team with no one to play?
Really? Because of sponsorship.
In terms of the appearance money and in terms of the sponsorship to the game. But Nathan Hughes, another big game. He's had like four man of the matches out of five in the last five games or something.
Why is he here then?
He got signed last March, I think it was, by Wasp.
As a replacement for number eight that left, Billy Vunipola.
Oh, right.
It was him and Ed Jackson.
So if he gets any better, he'll presumably go to Saracens then.
Fair play to Wasp. It's like seventh place is theirs.
And they'll play Stade Francais, I think it's been confirmed.
Oh, it has been confirmed in the playoffs.
Oh, wow. That'll be good. I mean,
that should be awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's like another...
Two extra meaningful games.
Yeah, another couple of high-profile games.
Gloucester London Irish was a dead rubber game, really.
Yeah. Now, someone around here has connections with London Irish. We won't mention who. What do certain members of the squad think of Marlon Yard? I was watching him play, and I thought, this guy must be amazing in training. It, just the way he bounces around. He is obviously a very fast man, but it's not so much he's so quick and straight line, it's how bouncy he is. He just goes from one direction to another direction. He moves like a housefly.
Yeah, he got half tackled and half lost his foot in, and then he's up and running strong and then changing direction and then scraped over the line. Very good, very impressive.
I would have no comment to make on what anyone in the squad. Speak for myself. I think he's a talented fella. Speak for myself as well. It's one of those situations which rugby brings up, which is a bit of an odd one, where a player decides halfway through a season they're leaving. Everyone knows they're leaving.
How do you, as a coach, put a guy like Marlon Yard into a game plan? Because you can't exactly say, right, okay, well, the outside centre is going to switch with the inside centre, who's coming on a loop, and then we give it to Marlon Yard, and then he's going to turn on a 90 degree step, spin, somersaults.
I mean, you might as well play. It's like playing John Madden American football, isn't it?
He's absolutely crazy to watch. I'd love to see him play sevens.
And Saracens won convincingly again against Worcester.
Yeah, Worcester. Only ever going one way. Yeah, it's pretty good,
you
know, too.
He's not. I'll tell you who else played really well. Alex Good.
Yeah, he did play
really well. He is playing outstandingly at the moment.
This has become a bit of a season of U-turns for JB, isn't it? JB, I hate. Owen Farrell, rubbish. Way better is Charlie Hodgson.
That is still true. So Charlie is a much better player.
You wrote off Alex Good. I don't see the point in Alex Good.
Completely wrote off Alex Good. In the last few games, he's been outstanding. So, anyway. And guess what? Penel scored for Worcester.
But what disappointed me from Penel, considering he's been getting such plaudit and being nominated for the Premiership Player of the Year, there was the two Ashton tries where Ashton was basically one-on-one with Penel and Penel pulled out of making a tackle both times.
Did he?
Yeah. It just let him dive over the line, which...
No good.
I know they were already relegated, but it's... Just put your body on the line. Well, make the tackle.
Tim will know more about this than me, but they all get media trained, yeah?
Yeah, I would have thought, yeah, absolutely.
So Penel's
even to the point where I believe that, like, the way that Premiership clubs operate is the media manager and the coaches will have some key points that they want to get across, and that will be the stuff that gets given to all the players before the designated media appearances, and then they'll be singing off the same hymn sheet.
So who do you reckon told Penel to say this? We made huge strides this year. You did. And this is probably the best one. Poor guy, because he had just been relegated. We're very proud of where we've come from. That would be the Premiership, Chris. You've come from the Premiership. I'd love to know who is circulating these sort of memories.
Well, this is exactly what I mean, because Dean Ryan said his points were what's happened has had to happen, and we have gone a long way to rectifying what was a situation that's been developing over a long period of time.
Oh, well done, Dean.
So, in other words, it's like
great work.
Everyone's been told, well done, guys. We've done what needed to be done and we're going to be better for it.
How have they come to that conclusion? So relegation is effectively a successful season then, really? Because they've done what's needed to be done.
When you actually look at this, the amount of money they have spent on very, very average players, it's...
Would it not be better if they said, we weren't very good this year, our transfer policy was pretty rubbish?
You can't come out at any point and say...
Just be honest.
We've overspent on players that are past it. Guys like... Oh, no, I don't want to name names. That seems cruel.
No, name names.
Chris Jones.
Oh, well done. Good name.
Because it'll be on six figures, I would have thought. And it's like, you know what? He had his day.
Dean Schofield made it into someone's dream team in the rugby paper the other day, which I found quite funny.
He was good.
Yeah,
he was good.
He was good.
Yeah, he went to Toulon and all the rest of it.
But it'll be on big money.
Yeah.
And the other way,
Jonathan Thomas hasn't really done it, which upsets me because I do love Jonathan Thomas. Surely
Ewan Murray.
Yeah.
A lot of guys on the way down who will be being paid big money.
There you go. There's my thoughts.
While we're staying on Premiership, let's talk about next week's game. And really, I mean...
Yeah, it's the one game that matters really, isn't it?
Exactly. Every team will be having players that are leaving and they'll want to say goodbye to, or fans, it'll be the last home game of the season. There'll be that whole big parade of the pitch. And all the games kicking off at the same time, and we're going to be there in the BT Sports studio whilst these games are going on in the media hub. Keep an eye out for us egg chasers. Well, I'm sure they'll be throwing to us regular intervals for comment. And
why would they not?
Why would they not?
I'm going to phone ahead and see if they'll set me up my own little officials hub where I can just get linked into all the different officials and just give them scorecards.
I don't think they'll be asking your opinion on officials on television, Jay, somehow. Before we get cracking on the next part of the podcast, Phil, you have a carrier bag in front of you.
I do.
What? It's time to ask, what on earth is going on with that?
So it's a little present for you guys.
Oh, really?
I was out doing some shopping today, and I thought, Tim and Jay would like some of this.
JB's touched, but that was just on rugby tour.
Hey.
It's all the rustling.
Yes, I know what this is.
What is this?
That's you, Tim.
Oh, I'm smelling this. I know what it is.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, man, this is an incredibly lean source of protein, isn't it?
It is.
This apparently is what Jack Berger eats for breakfast. Oh, is that lunch.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is this biltong or?
It is, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Chili biltong from a local biltong supplier.
Bob's biltong in Haywood.
Tim, you've got £2. That's a present from me to you.
Oh, Phil.
Jay, you've got £10 worth there. That'll be £10, please.
Thank you, Phil.
Oh, do you know what? Jack Berger has this. So eating this will instantly make me a phenomenal rugby player, I'm sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
He's nothing but burst.
That is good.
I read an article about... it was about Brad Barrett, but he's now using an arthritis cream for a previous ankle injury. And Jack Berger's using the same thing. And I've treated myself to some of it last week. I've bought some of this anti-arthritis cream that... according to the article, a lot of the Saracens guys are using to try and sort out my shoulder.
Do you know what I thought you were about to say then? I thought you were going to say that Brad Barrett, because he's South African too, and biltong, as you can tell, it's quite hard to eat, uses arthritis cream on his jaw.
He wouldn't need to. The amount of muscle on Brad Barrett's jaw, there's no amount of biltong chewy enough to stop him from chomping down on that. And before we go any further as well, I've got a game of rugby social for us.
Oh, excellent.
Now, this is where, you know, there's a lot of rugby fans... Well, the word rugby social is something that's been going on up and down clubs at the end of the season, kangaroo courts and the like. But with rugby players, they love a bit of Twitter. So rugby social is just looking at the Twitter responses and the Twitter updates of professional rugby players and a little game quizzing you on what they've been saying. So... let's play Rugby Social. And the first tweet is from Joe Marler, who pictured a semi-naked picture of who? Was it teammate Paul Doran-Jones? Was it coach Conor O'Shea? Or was it Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones? Who has Joe Marler been tweeting a semi-nude picture of?
Now, I do know that Paul Doran-Jones was featured in this month's front cover of Attitude magazine, which...
Oh, really?
Yeah, which... Jay, you know exactly what that is, don't you?
It's a magazine that Ben Cohen carries.
Yeah, get the latest copy out of your bag. Let's have a look at what's in it.
Where is it? I've not read Attitude, but here it's a very good publication.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never read it. It's a gay man's lifestyle magazine.
No, you haven't read it.
So I've not...
There is no man who... There's no straight man who is as gaily dressed as Phil.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's very, very well groomed as Phil. Very well groomed.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Answers, please, gentlemen.
So, Paul Doran Jones.
You're saying Paul Doran Jones for me. Jay, what are you saying?
I know who I wanted to be, so I'm gonna go with who I wanted to be and say Paul Doran Jones, please.
Yes, for exactly the reason Phil said. Paul Doran Jones has done an article.
How did you know that, Phil?
It was all over Twitter last week.
Well, because we have the same account, don't we? And I didn't see it.
Paul Doran-Jones has been basically saying, you know, he's just got a four-month-old baby. He's not a gay man, but he says he hopes that gay men in rugby feel comfortable to come out, and they should, because rugby's the sort of game that is very accepting of it.
Exactly.
And I think great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Next question in Rugby Social, then. Comes from Matt Banahan, whose son was 3 years old last week, and he's been tweeting about it.
He's taking him to get a tattoo.
Did he get, JB, did he get his son for his third birthday a Captain America costume? Did he get him a Lego Millennium Falcon? Or did he get him, cheers for spoiling the punchline, a sleeve tattoo?
Sleeve tattoo.
Phil.
The Captain America outfit.
Jay.
The one which isn't a sleeve tattoo, but isn't the one that fills
Millennium Falcon. It is the Captain America costume. So
yes.
And the final question in this week's Rugby Social comes from a man we said you should get following on Twitter because he's very entertaining, the Canadian international and London Irish back row, second row, Jeb Sinclair, who is now a follower at Rugby Podcast, as I mentioned earlier. So, Jeb Sinclair, just like JB, has been getting out his summer wardrobe with a little bit of nice sunshine we've had over the bank holiday weekend. Did Jeb Sinclair post a picture of himself wearing, and is his choice of summer attire, cut-off jeans and a XXXL bodybuilder's gym vest?
Nice.
Is it a Canadian lycra suit with a maple leaf on the front? Or was it salmon shorts with a leopard print T-shirt?
Oh, goodness.
Wow. One of those is the is the combo.
They're all ludicrous.
He has got pretty wild taste, as Jeb
Sinclair. Same Jeb Sinclair, isn't it, that took a picture of himself naked on a bike?
On Ian Gough's. On yeah. Welsh International Ian Gough's motorbike, yeah.
Nice.
So you're not giving us the...
Not giving you what?
The option of a Canadian tuxedo.
What's a Canadian tuxedo? Is that, what's that a euphemism for? It's naked?
No, just double denim.
I've not heard that.
Have you not?
I thought it was going to be like a lumberjack shirt, but with shorter arms.
He has been wearing...
I'm going to go for the cut-off denim.
Cut-off denim shorts and an XXXL bodybuilder's vest.
I'm going to go for the last one, which is the leopard prints.
Leopard print and salmon shorts combo. I can reveal... JB, you're right.
Yes! Oh.
It's an interesting look.
How do you like those apples?
And only the other day, JB was saying he wants to get himself some salmon-coloured khaki, some chinos. Chino shorts.
Chinos, yeah.
Oh, actually, full-length chinos you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
Wow. There you go. We can see how that would look on you by imagining a much less athletic-looking man wearing what Jeb Sinclair's wearing. But yeah, there we go. That's Rugby Social. Let's get on with the next bit of the podcast. And what we've got to talk about here is... Let's talk about that one game, because, I mean, Leicester Saracens, that could have been a huge game. And actually, in fairness, it will be an important game. And I think both sides will take that very seriously, albeit they won't want to put anyone in the firing line and keep the powder dry. But they also won't want to... Leicester won't want to lose to Saracens at home.
True. I think there's more of an incentive for Saracens to rest a couple of players because they've already assured top spot. They're already assured the home... semi.
But it's all about Quinn's Bath. I mean, just to run through the other games, Irish have got a final game at the Medeci Stadium against Sale Sharks. A dead rubber, but, you know, obviously they'll want to win. Newcastle, Exeter, Northampton Wasps and Worcester Gloucester.
So it's basically only one game that really matters.
Quinn's Bath.
Quinn's Bath, isn't it?
3:15 kickoff at the Stoop. And the situation is Quinn's are, what, how many points behind?
3 points behind.
Right. So if Bath get two bonus points, they're losing bonus point if and a try bonus point. Do you know what I think we should do? I think we should take the two teams, Harlequins and Bath, and pick 115 from the two squads, their regular starters. So, fullback, good as Nick Abendanen is, you'd pick Mike Brown, wouldn't you?
Do you want to go from... Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Stylistically?
No.
I never said the word twice now. Abendanen can run. In fact, imagine Abendanen in the...
Mike Brown, though.
Yeah.
You just got to pick one. You're not going to not pick Mike Brown, are you?
Well, I'm just thinking, if there's an advantage Abendanen had, it'd be his running game, which would be...
He's a fantastic player, but he's just happens on this occasion to be facing off against the best fullback in the Premiership.
Northern Hemisphere.
So which wingers would you pick of the two teams?
So Sam Smith dropped out just before kickoff, and Hugo Monier came in and scored a great try. The four wingers are Tom Williams and Hugo Monier started for Harlequins, and Anthony Watson and Matt Banahan.
Ooh, God, I thought it was going to be better than this.
Bath have also got Aguella.
Aguja. Rocco Degouni.
And Rocco Degouni, who played for the Army.
You'd pick him at right wing, wouldn't you?
Rocco Degouni and probably Aguja.
Not Anthony Watson?
Anthony Watson. So it looks like Bath...
No, not Anthony Watson. I don't think he's complete enough.
Banahan?
Not so much. Not for me.
Who would you pick then? I'd pick Rocco Dunguni and...
Maybe Watson.
Yeah, I'd probably pick Watson. Centres.
So, Molinar and Jordan Turner.
We can only really pick one centre here because the other one's taken. You're playing Henson, right? Bath love him at the moment. Did he play the whole game?
No.
So, Jonathan Joseph and Ollie Devoto played. Eastman didn't play for Bath. I quite like Eastman. I think I'd probably pick Joseph.
Yeah,
and Eastman.
Joseph and Eastman. So you'd have so far the Bath back line, except for Mike Brown at the back. Fly half. This is a showdown.
Okay. Yeah, right now, this is great.
George Ford or Nick Evans?
Right now it's Nick Evans. Next year it's George Ford.
I'd go with that.
And at nine, Danny Kerr.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've got the half backs and full back.
Yeah.
Some real key decision making positions.
Yeah.
Quins.
And
the midfield and wingers, so the sort of finishing power and defensive unit, Bath.
Yeah.
Which probably just shows up how balanced this is, and maybe the 9-10 axis and 15 could actually be critical.
Why do I think we're missing a centre? Who are the other Harlequin centres?
Tom Casson is injured.
So someone we're missing. Is it Hopper?
Yeah, Matt Hopper.
Injured.
Into the pack then.
So, do you start in the front row?
Yeah, front row.
David Wilson, Rob Webber, Paul James.
That's fine by me.
Started for Bath compared to Kyle Sinclair.
Not yet.
Dave Ward and Joe Marler.
I'd go Joe Marler, David Wilson, and...
Wrong answer.
I'd probably go Dave Ward the way he's playing.
That was actually the one I was struggling with.
David Wilson, Joe Marler as your props. The props that started the last England match.
Yeah.
Would you not have Paul James?
No.
I'd have Marler ahead of James.
Every interview that you read where Paul James comes up, including one with Adam Jones actually, says he's the most destructive scrimmager.
Hmm.
And that's very... I think that's quite interesting.
The one area that Paul James beats Joe Marler is on having a bigger underhang of his bottom jaw.
Yeah,
huge underbite. If we were picking on that, who's got the biggest lower jaw, I'd go Paul James. But because we're talking about rugby, I'll go Joe Marler on this one.
Yeah, me too.
I'd go Paul James.
Hooker, Nathan Catt.
Huh? Nathan Catt's a prop.
Oh, you obviously didn't see the game.
No, why?
Did he?
Ross Batty and...
Rob Webber
went down injured. Initially, when they ran over to the touchline, this was about 15, 20 minutes to go, and Bath went, we don't have anyone who can hook on the bench. Wayne Barnes went, right, we need to lose a player from the field then.
Yeah.
You need to drop a player. You can't just change on... You can't just substitute on
a back row or winger or whatever.
I'm not sure.
And Matt Carley, the referee, went, okay, then we'll play on. You're down to 14, Bath, said to Stuart Hooper. And the Bath team were like, what? What's going on? And that's the laws. If you can't...
Yeah, it is. So hang on. So they brought on Mike... Sorry, Mike.
So basically then suddenly from saying on the Bath touchline, we have no one that can play hooker, then they went, oh, actually, both our props... Nathan Catt can play hooker.
And he went on
and hooked.
Did he do well?
They won a penalty in the first one.
Yep.
In the first scrum, and then they lost one or two. So now, it kind of swings around.
I think in the case of Bath, actually taking off one of your front row and replacing with a back row isn't going to benefit you that much anyway, because they're just such big physical units that I wouldn't want a smaller guy on the field, especially. Webber is a beast.
They're back row small guys. Which Bath back row players are small guys?
Actually, that's a very, very good point.
Carl Ferns, Leroy Houston.
Mawson, Gorney,
you could probably argue that Peronisi's quicker than most of that back row.
Oh, God, Peronisi. Do you not fancy him somewhere in there?
So Joe Marler, David Wilson, and then it's... probably Rob Weller won't be available. Ross Batty might be.
Definitely go Webber. I'd go Webber now. I think
I'd go Ward.
I think Ward's pushing close
because of the work he does all around the park. Webber's a bigger guy. And
how about his throwing in?
It is suspect at times.
Yeah, he's definitely worked on it the last couple of years.
It's like watching someone throw a loaf of bread.
If everyone was fit, I'd probably go Rob Webber. If it was out of Ross Batty and Dave Ward, I'll go Dave Ward. So
yeah,
sort of in the middle on that one. Second rows then, Mr. Atwood.
Atwood and Hooper. Don't think there's anyone.
Nick Kennedy?
I've not seen him play this year.
Yeah, he's been pretty quiet this year, hasn't he?
Yeah, go on. I do love Nick Kennedy, though. I think he's a fantastic player. Yeah. And I also like George Robson, but I don't think they're quite as good as those two. And also, I like the old kind of northness of Hooper. I don't even know if he is that old. I think he's about 32, is he?
I probably would...
Hooper's a good player.
I probably would go Hooper, Atwood.
Yeah.
Just out of the four that played last weekend.
And Atwood can be
Charlie Matthews is quite a promising good player, though.
But... Yeah, he's only young.
Into the back row, then.
Start
so far, Bath are dominating the front five. Well, three out of five.
Well, start with Lowe.
He's not been playing, though. He's been injured.
Yeah, but when he does play, he's world-class.
Agreed, if he was fit, but I think he's out for the rest of the season
Rob Shaw at seven. I'm going to say Nick Easter at eight.
I would, too.
You'd have Lowe, though.
Lowe was available, but I don't know that he would be.
He won't be available. I know that.
I'd have Lowe and Ferns.
I'd have Garvey if fit.
Oh, Garvey.
Garvey,
well.
Robshaw, Easter.
Depends what kind.
Yeah, I probably would. That sounds like quite a nice.
Are you saying no Lowe?
Well, he's not been fit for the past month, and he's not fit for the rest of the season.
All right. So if fit, the sixth position would be filled by someone from Bath: Lowe, Garvey, Ferns.
Yeah,
one of those would fill that position.
I'd happily go into a game with all three with all three of those.
Well, I'm sure that will happen in the
in the
postseason if they get there. So let me just run that down, and this shows what a tight battle it is. The forwards: Joe Marler. We were split on Dave Ward and Rob Webber, and David Wilson. Mm-hmm. Atwood and Hooper. So that's an area of strength for Bath, is a front five. No prizes there. We knew that.
Yeah.
Back row, Robshaw, Easter, and a Bath player, Lo Garvey.
Yeah.
Which shows that actually, Harlequins and Bath, that's a big old battle. That whoever wins the back row battle is probably going to win the game, potentially. Halfbacks, both from Quins, Danny Kerr, Nick Evans. Mm-hmm. Mike Brown at 15 from Quins. And then the whole midfield and three quarters aside from that, from Bath, Anthony Watson, Kyle Eastman, Jonathan Joseph, Rocco Degouni. Now, I just look at that and go, one, it's a really even split between the players, but they're at the Stoop. And
yeah.
Number 8, number 9, number 10, number 15, all Quins.
Yeah, key, very key positions, aren't they?
Spine of the team. Oh, well, I think if Quins are going to win it, they're going to win it by speeding the game up enormously and getting that Bath pack to move around, just like they did against Leicester.
I think Harlequins will be beasted early this week doing line-out defensive drills and hitting the scrummage machine,
yeah,
won't they?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not sure I'd want to be playing Kyle Sinclair, though.
Well, this is a big test for him, isn't it? Big old test for him.
That could be the weak point.
Oh, man, it's hard to call. I think with home advantage and those guys in those positions, I think Quins might edge this.
I think Quins might win, but I think Bath go through.
Yeah, I think they might win by less than 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll be the way.
Exciting.
Isn't it, Josh?
Yeah.
Exciting all the way. Oh, wow. Well, let's turn our attention briefly to across the channel and France, where Perpignan have been relegated from the top 14, and James Hook looks like he could be on his way to Lyon. Mm. Hasn't been a successful jaunt for him at Perpignan.
No, everything about this move to Perpignan has been a disaster for James Hook. Yeah. Like, he's lost his place.
His bank balance. I'm sure his accountant will disagree with that.
I feel like his stature as an international player has fallen. Everyone still says he's the most talented guy around, but he's in a relegated team and he doesn't play for Wales, and he's behind Rhys Priestland. What a disaster. I'd like to see him come to England. That'd be wonderful. Ooh, that's a good question.
Oh, well.
Who would look best with James Hook in their side?
He'd improve Newcastle amazingly. Well, they've got no options at 10 that I... Well,
he's not going there.
He's not going
to
go there.
If Leicester somehow managed to rip up the Freddie Burns deal...
Which they're busy doing, by the way.
Yeah, which I'm sure they're working very hard
to. That's a lovely idea.
Would you want to put James Hook at 10 in Leicester and put Owen Williams on the bench?
Well, what do they miss when they're missing Flood? Because, yeah, Flood has been dropped for rugby reasons, and he now comes on as this, like, utility guy. And there's no better utility guy in the world
than
James Hook. Yeah, but
comes on as a utility guy. Yeah. He starts your game. I suppose it'd be good, you know. Yeah, yeah. Because Owen Williams will probably be involved in the Welsh setup next year.
He covers a lot of places. It'd be nice to see him with a big park and in his Leicester colours. Oh, yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, nice front football.
Go on.
I was going to say, has Andy Goode re-signed for next year? Or is he finished? Because Wasps could be a good move for Hook.
That's a great shout.
Well, I think what we've shown with Andy Goode is that age doesn't matter. He has a skill set which age will not actually affect.
And weight.
To be fair, he's a player that's past his prime, now in his 30s and on the way down, out of an international setup, but would still command a huge wage. Worcester.
Yes, Worcester.
It's logical. That's been their formula for the last few years, isn't it?
I mean, actually, Worcester have got a bit of a track record with Welsh players, but so recently have Wasps with Dai Young.
Yeah,
so
that's
could be a really good fit there.
It could be good for both parties there.
But France, interestingly, we discussed this on a previous podcast about during the Six Nations, about the way that the top 14 isn't fostering a good national team for France, and they're limiting the chances for young players by having no rules on the number of foreigners that can be in and the salary caps being huge and all the rest of it. And France are just bringing in rules now to incentivise, some would say not going far enough, but to incentivise having homegrown French young players in your squad rather than foreign nationals.
Yeah, so they get additional money. The salary cap is raised for each international player they have. But they've also made it easier for young French players to be loaned from the top clubs to any of the other clubs so that they can get game time.
And they can keep them on the books then for...
And yeah, so say Toulon's got a really good French back row, but he's not getting in ahead of all the rest of them, Lobby and Smith and Armitage. They can loan him out to someone who's mid-table.
Yeah.
And so he'll be playing week in, week out in the top French division rather than just getting little bits of game time at Toulon, so it's benefiting the national team.
And I imagine that the French Division 1 is at least as competitive as the Rabble.
Well, they can loan them out to within the top 14.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's good. But it means that you're not decreasing the quality of the league as well, because you're keeping the top clubs with the top international players.
You get additional space in your salary cap for having French
international
qualified players in your squad.
Yeah. So these aren't the only changes to rugby leagues over the last week or so. Is this not something going on with Super Rugby?
Yeah, Super Rugby, they're talking about expanding it to 18 teams, which would include a team in Argentina, allowing the Argentinian players that currently and historically have been playing in England, France and Italy to go back home to Argentina and be paid a full-time wage to play in the Super Rugby, and also a franchise in Japan, potentially.
Yes, so the additional three teams would be Argentinian, an Asian one, although it's not, it probably would be Japan, given the money that they've spent, and the Southern Kings, who got replaced by the Golden Lions. Yeah. So there'd be six South African teams, and the way they'd do it would they'd keep the five-team New Zealand and the five-team Australian groups, and then they'd have four-team groups operating out of South Africa, which would include the other two, the Argentinian and the
So you'll love
Japanese
this, Jay, taking a bit of an NFL-type format with conferences, and everyone plays everyone, but some people play people twice in their own little conference, and the winners of the conferences go through to the playoffs.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
With the amount of money that there is in Japan, like if you look at some of the players that have gone to Japan in the past few years, there is so much money for rugby there. They could have like the Toulon of the East. They could really build an incredible team.
Japan's obviously a good place to put a team. Hong Kong, I'd say, might be a good place to put a team. Got a nice stadium there.
Big following.
What would they be called?
The Argentinian team.
Yeah.
Just call them the Pumas.
Like the Gauchos or something.
Actually, maybe they should be called the Jaguars, because that's what the Pumas are. That's what the Argentinian national team's supposed to be.
The Belgranos?
They're supposed to be.
When they were started, they were the Jaguars.
Yeah. That's the Jaguars.
And then it was actually someone else. Well, somehow they started being called the Pumas, and that wasn't actually what
a journalist got it wrong.
Yeah.
It's like the All Blacks aren't called really the All Blacks. They're the All Backs, because they played like All Backs. They thought it was a spelling mistake and called him All Blacks.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That is actually right.
Hold on a minute.
Uh-oh. Hang on. Don't you be testing my stories with your facts, Phil.
Fact.
Phil's furiously typing now.
Well, Phil's Googling this. Yeah, we need confirmation, please.
There's wiki answers.
I hate that.
Notoriously unreliable. Saying basically the same thing that you're saying, Jay.
Mm-hmm. I did write that post.
Did you write this article?
Let's give it that then.
Fact.
Let's give it one of them.
Yes.
Wow. But I like that as a development for rugby. And that and the addition of a meaningful competition for some of the second tier nations in Europe. And I think rugby is on the right track.
Hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. Because we touched on it before. It's probably bad for rugby if players like Nathan Hughes opt to play for England rather than for Fiji.
Yes.
Because you don't want a World Cup where you've only got four or five teams that can win it. You want a World Cup where there's 20 teams going out who can all potentially win it.
In fact, wouldn't a franchise, that whether they're based in New Zealand or Australia or somewhere, but a
Pacific Island
15 or whatever the I don't know what the political term for those group of islands is.
Well, they do have the Pacific Islanders team. They play like a group, don't they?
So players that are qualified to play for Samoa, Fiji, and Tonga,
and Japan's close enough. You can pretty much get a bus from Japan to Tonga, so it'd work well to put it there.
I think
it's a great idea.
I think people will definitely have thought of that, and that's probably on the long term strategy. Whether it's a bit too unachievable at the moment, but whether it's further down the line.
Well, the thing is, apparently the South African market, the amount of TV money that in South Africa dwarfs everything else. So it's basically down to what other South Africans want, because they've got so much more power.
And whereas Australia Super Rugby is on its ass, it's really,
is it really
struggling. Yeah. Financially, crowds.
Just crowd, yeah.
Just really, really struggling. Basically, because there's no. It's similar with Wales, in fact, and the Welsh regions, in that people have their local teams, and they don't really have any strong allegiance with the franchise, the regional franchise. They're up against rugby league, and rugby league have got those historical rivalries and those historical roots of clubs.
Have you ever seen the documentary with Russell Crowe when he first bought?
When he first bought the
yeah And he got one of their fans, the Rabiseau fans, to write a book of rivalries. And before the game, they'd have Russell Crowe doing a gladiator impression.
Oh, wow.
And he has this big book, just for the listeners, I'm holding up a book now. I know this doesn't translate well for podcasts. But he'd hold up this book, and the super fan had written everything in it. And he'd open it up, and there'd be like fake dust in it, and he'd blow off the dust and start reading about all of the rivalries which have happened between these two teams.
It was awesome. Wow.
I don't know if he's bored of that now or what, but he still seems to be quite into his rugby, so I doubt he is.
Love it.
Mm.
I'm Russell Crowe. Smashed a few tinnies and arrived here by horse. Oh, that'd be awesome. Love it. Love it, love it.
I know you probably want to move on, but before you...
Just on that one, Australia's so on its arse that basically the Waratahs have been told... The Waratahs have been told, find a buyer. Now, there's rumours that that buyer could come from, I think it's Narbonne in France, potentially. Bob Dwyer, the old Australia coach.
He's not in Narbonne, is he?
I think he might be.
They're in Division 1.
I might be wrong on the team, but anyway, Bob Dwyer and whoever the consortium is looking after that French team are interested in buying the Waratahs, and so is... the consortium that's taken over London Irish.
Mm.
What would that mean?
Rumours of them. And basically the way this came out is there was someone from the Waratahs who shouldn't have been talking so publicly about such things, talking very loudly in a restaurant, and a journalist overheard and published the story.
Oh, dearie me.
Yeah, but interesting. Mm. We will watch those developments. Just a couple of other transfers and a couple of the latest ones. Firstly, Sebastian Chabal is retiring. Sunday's his last game, Seabass.
Oh, no.
Is he going to be a full-time fairy now? The currency fairy.
Just full-time dominator.
Is it fair to say he was the kind of almost like the Cantona of rugby for a little while?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The best bit was during the World Cup in France when an English journalist said, ahead of the France-England match, do you mind answering a question in English? And he said, no. And then blurted out something like, we're in France, I'm French. And got up and walked out.
He's awesome. Dropped the mic.
Guy is awesome. I love him. So he's retiring. And in addition to that, Mills Muliaina is going to Connacht.
What?
Mills Muliaina.
Does he know where Connacht is?
He's going to Connacht. It's a great signing for them.
That's an incredible signing. It sounds very suspicious, though. I wonder if this is another like Matt Gitto fuel pellet type deal. he's been promised something.
Do you know who else is quietly going about their business in quite a nice fashion? I like what Sale Sharks are doing.
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
Luke McLean, that's a good signing, that.
Yeah.
Fullback.
I rate Luke McLean.
Italian international Luke McLean.
Oh, when was that announced?
Last week.
Mm. That's not bad.
Thursday, I think.
So it's another Australian-born European capped player alongside Nathan Hines.
Nathan Hines coming as well.
Nathan Hines could be a good... I don't know, really. Is Nathan Hines a good signing? I don't know.
I think so. He's starting for Claremont.
It's a two-year deal they've given him. So that's the
question
mark.
Not many teams are giving him a two-year deal. I would imagine Claremont might have given him a one-year deal. But
yeah, I would have thought so. I would have thought most teams would give him a one-year deal.
They'll pair him up with Ostrakov and Patterson,
and
I guess.
And they've got Dimashi as well, the front row, Italian front row international at Sale as well. Some good, big like marquee signings, but good quality. Right, podcast done. Do you know what? Before we go, should we have one more listen to that Mick Morgan remix?
Yes, please. I've had a lot of great feedback about this.
Yeah, me too.
Has Mick Morgan phoned you?
No.
He has your number.
Does he?
Yeah.
So we may well have Mick Morgan on the podcast any week now. I think we need to proactively call him rather than him calling us. Because clearly the man's so good he's going to be off the hook answering phone calls.
Well, actually he is. I phoned Castleford. Yes, Castleford. And I spoke to the press guy who gave me his number. But he is getting a lot of requests for interviews, for his commentary. Even though he's been around for a while, it's a relatively recent phenomenon, this.
Yeah, very recent.
Once again, let's just rewind to the start of the season. The Honey Badger was popular, Nick Cummins, but the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, we featured him week after week after week after week, and then his bubble started to grow. We've been featuring Mick Morgan for months. His bubble is starting to grow. Jacques Berger follows us. Alistair Eakin on his way to BT matches listens to us. I think all this is basically just pointing to is the fact we are the tastemakers for the rugby world.
Exactly.
Whatever the code.
We speak for the people.
Exactly. And so it's very important you keep getting in touch with us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. But I will leave you with the song from Mick Morgan, the awesome rugby league commentator, and the little dance remix that we asked for and good old Henry delivered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.